I'm Ralph Diaz, Secretary of the Department of Corrections and Rehabilitation. This episode of Ear Hustle contains language that may not be appropriate for all listeners. Discretion is advised.
Right now I work in the sewer plant.
What do you do in the sewer?
It's terrible.
So, like, what do you see in the sewer? Okay, like, what do you do? What does your job consist of?
Okay, so at my stage, I get into my jumpsuit and I put on my rain boots, put on your mask and your gloves, and then you go down into the pit, and all the sewage through the whole facility goes into these two little rivers, and then there's these grates. So my job was I'm clearing out these grates, and I use like a hose, is all spray. And some days, like, I could go down there and like knock it very dirty, then other days I'm like wringing out my beard like a wet towel.
So wait a minute. So you saying you got shit on your face?
Maybe not literally like on my face, but you know, it's a dirty job.
And your beard is on your face, Shane.
You're now tuned in to Ear Hustle from PRX's Radiotopia. I'm Nigel Poor. I've been working with the guys in San Quentin State Prison in California for about 8 years.
I'm Erline Woods, a podcaster and former resident of San Quentin. One of the last interviews I did when I was still incarcerated was with sewer worker Shane Hampton. Like me, he was about to get out, and like me, he was thinking about his future.
But I like put it on a resume when I get out, say I worked in a water treatment plant. Because I'm dying for things to put on a fucking resume. All these stupid tattoos.
Together, we take you inside the prison
and back outside, post-incarceration. This week, we're staying mostly outside the prison, and we're going to hear from a few formerly incarcerated people about their jobs, the struggle to find a job when you have a record,
and the anxieties of being back in the workforce after a long time away.
Hey everyone, I'm Amy Standen, Ear Hustle's editor.
And I'm Rasan New York Thomas, Ear Hustle producer. And do you believe, Amy, they left us alone to kick off the fundraiser?
We better not blow it, Rasan. The stakes are high.
We're gonna blow it. We just have to find new jobs, I guess. This is the second Ear Hustle fundraiser I've been here for, and I never knew how much the show relies on listener support.
It really, really does. From now through the end of this season in June, our goal is to reach 1,000 donors.
So, Amy, for folks who donate, should we tell them where that money goes?
Sure. These donations help fund our ongoing work, but also things like getting us into prisons where we've never been before. Like if you enjoyed our episode about the hospice program at CMF, or the ones we've done with the women we've been meeting at the world's largest women's prison, CCWF. And there's also some really cool behind-the-scenes stuff, like developing an Ear Hustle curriculum for high school teachers.
Listener donations support all of that. Plus, this year, supporters will be invited to join us for a virtual party on June 13th, and they get a playlist of songs picked by the team.
And everyone who donates $10 a month or more will get access to Ear Hustle Plus, which is our new subscription service with ad-free episodes and bonus content.
Find out more and donate at earhustlesq.com.
Listener support means so much to us. Thank you. Should we give the mic back to Nigel and Erline now?
Not yet. We just got it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds.
You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Erline, before you started working on Ear Hustle, what kind of work did you do in prison?
I had all kinds of jobs. for some reason, they used to always try to put me in the kitchen.
Oh.
Because when it go down that you worked in the kitchen, oh, yeah, you the easy pull.
Is it not because you like to eat?
No, that's the problem. I eat too much in the kitchen. That's why I had to get out the kitchen.
I think you also were working on the yard crew when I first met you.
Yeah, I was working on the yard crew, and which was a kickback job. That's what allowed me to come down so often because my job consisted of 10 minutes.
Okay, did you ever have a job like Shane's, the guy we heard at the top, the job that you so nicely called shit stirring?
Hell no, I'd have been quit that job. But you know Shane, he's a positive guy.
Yeah, truly.
He said there were actually some good things about his time stirring shit.
Yes. The water treatment plant was located outside the walls of San Quentin, and so he basically got to go out every day to do his job.
Yeah, because people like him were minimum security.
Mm-hmm.
So based on their crime and the time they got left, they get to go outside. They get a gate pass.
And because of that, he had his like own shower, his own bathroom, and it was really quiet.
And there's like wildlife out there too. There's like a lot of geese, and they just had like a bunch of goslings. So the dad and the mom, they're like real protective. So I take a bunch of, with you know, the jumpsuits that we have, and I tie them over the railing so that they can't see me. And then I'd like crouch down behind the, you know, like take cover, and I throw pieces of bread over, and then it attracts them. And then when they get close enough, there's like some water out there, and the little baby geese will eat it, and I can like reach my hand out and like pet a baby goose.
Oh my God, that is so cute.
Truly it is.
That guy can even find the bright side of working literally in shit.
Shane told us that up to that point in his life, it was the longest he'd ever held a job.
Like a lot of guys inside, he had a checkered job history before prison. Like the time his sister got him a job as an Easter bunny in a mall.
It's this big pink Easter bunny costume, and it's not ventilated or anything like that except for like the mouth slit. It's got to be like 180 degrees in this thing, right? And I'm sweating just profusely. And I go to take pictures, and everything's going fine at first. And then I don't know if it was like heat or like the lack of sleep the night before, but I started getting drowsy inside the suit. And when this woman like handed me her baby to like take a picture, like the first Easter bunny picture, and like this baby's so like small and like wiggly, and I may have like fallen asleep for like a split second. And when I did, like this wiggly little baby kind of like did like a back bend, like it was gonna fall out of my hands. And so the woman goes to grab it, and then I get startled awake, and I yank the baby away, and it turned into like this big fiasco. And so after that, my little sister pulled me to the side and let me know that I was being let go from the Easter bunny position.
So how long did you last on the job?
Like 35 minutes, I think.
At the time, Shane was already struggling with drugs, which was the main reason he couldn't keep a job.
But he did have a hustle, robbing stuff and breaking into cars.
I broke into a car. I was in the person's trunk, and like someone just runs up, and like it's a guy and his girlfriend. And he's like, "Hey, man, what the fuck?" And I'm like, "Oh, shit." And like his girlfriend's like, "Light him up, light him up, light him up." I was like, And then he's like, "Shane?" And I was like, "Larry, I went to high school with the guy." He's like, "You take anything?" I was like, "No." It was just like pathetic heroin act. Like, "No, I didn't take it." He's like, "Here's 10 bucks, man." His girlfriend's like, "Beat his ass, beat his ass." He's like, "All right, man, you don't look like you're doing too good." He's like, "I'm not." So he's like,
when we talked to him about a week before he got out of prison, I thought he was looking pretty good.
He looked great.
But like we said, he had a checkered work history and not a lot to put on his resume. Is there anything you're nervous about leaving?
Yeah, getting a job. I don't know. I've got a bunch of dumb tattoos, you know. I just, where you been for the past 2 years? But
I guess they don't have the rule anymore, the law that you have to say that you've been in prison.
Well, that's great information. That's something I didn't,
I'm pretty sure. Didn't that law change?
When you come from a small town like Santa Cruz, though, it's like they have this thing called mugshots, and they just like Google your name, and then all your mugshots come up. So a part of me feels like even though they may not ask you, they could probably, if they were curious, or put two and two together.
I think that's what everybody does now.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like a background check. I know my girlfriend did that when she first met me. She said, I don't know about this guy.
We'll get back to Shane later in the episode to see how it went for him when he got out. But now we're going to hear from Tracy Hartway. She had a lot of trouble with background checks after she did time.
Tracy served several short terms, the last one being 2 years in a Nevada prison. While she was there, she dreamed about having a career as a writer, and some of the other women she was locked up with ended up being her first editors.
a lot of times I would read them excerpts in my book and be like, how you think this sound? You know, do you think that's good or whatever? I mean, and they were really my cheerleaders, you know what I'm saying? A shout out to all the girls in there who listened to me repeat the same shit over and over again. Does it sound better like this or does it sound better like that? You know, and then I would listen to their stories and be like, ooh, I could use that. You know what I'm saying? Or, ooh, that sound like some dope ass shit. I never thought about using it that way. You know what I mean?
And when you were in there writing it, like, you was just in your own world, huh?
I was. I could write for hours. You know what I'm saying? I could write for 12 hours in a day. I get in the zone, put my headphones on, tune everything out, and just go.
She also wrote business plans while she was inside, one for a cleaning business and one for a fashion company. She had big plans.
Big plans.
But when you touch down and you come out here to the world, shit don't happen like that. Life show up. Is where am I gonna sleep tonight? What am I gonna eat? You know, what is my PO gonna say?
Tracy didn't have a transitional house lined up the first time she got out.
And she kept having this experience where she'd get through an interview, get hired, and then after a few days on the job, HR would run a background check.
First time this happened, she was working for a very large online retailer.
They did the mouth swab drug test, and then they hit me with a pre-adverse action notice.
A pre-adverse action notice. That's some bureaucratic bullshit.
I done got this letter so many times, I damn near know it by heart. Due to one or more items on your background check, we are sorry, we have to rescind our offer of employment to you. In the fine print, it says you have like 5 days to dispute this, to dispute anything that's found on the background check if you requested a copy. And most of the time you think dispute, well, shit, I can't dispute none of that. I did that shit. It's on my record. Like, you know what I'm saying?
Like Tracy said, she ran into this a lot. In spite of the fact that in California, it's prohibited to ask about criminal records on job applications.
Banning the box, as it's called. But because she didn't have to admit her criminal record up front, she kept having that same experience where she'd get partway through the job hiring process and sometimes even to orientation. And then they'd run that background check on her. Goodbye job.
Finally, she did get hired through a temp agency. She got a job at a call center for a major bank.
I was hella happy. I was like, yes, it was exhilarating. And it was something you could be proud of. Like, shit, I'm finna go to work. You know what I'm saying? And I hate getting up in the morning, but I was there at 7 o'clock. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was nobody's business.
Things were going really well for her for a while.
I loved my job. For 9 months, I did that job. And I did it well. Being the nature of my crime, I should have not had a job with so much access to sensitive information, but nothing ever came wrong up with any of my accounts. You know, I was done with that lifestyle.
So Tracy's crime involved fraud, specifically T-Nax Freenaud.
You mean tax fraud?
Yep. In your head, when you got the job, did that other person that you used to be was like, I can't believe this shit. They let me in here with all this damn money.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I ain't gonna lie. I was like, oh shit. And then once I realized what type of access I had, you know what I'm saying? I mean, I'm getting name, birthday, social security number, security question, the whole 9 yards. And you can try to do some fuck shit, but who wants to jeopardize their job and their freedom behind that? Actually doing something or actually trying something was the farthest thing from my mind.
Because you was content.
Right, I
was with
grateful.
Having a job, done your...
I was glad they let me in.
Right.
When nobody else let me in, you know what I'm saying? So why would I bite the hand that feeds me?
After 9 months at the job, Tracy got in a fight with her roommate, and the roommate called Tracy's boss and told them about her criminal history.
About a week later, I got a phone call saying that they wanted to do a conference call with me. I took that conference call, and it was a trip because I was on the phone with like 5 or 6 big wigs. You know what I'm saying? I had some white people swimming in my head, you know what I'm saying? And they basically asked me, you know, is this you? Yeah, that's me.
She resigned instead of being fired, and things got tough after that.
For 6 months, I'm getting denial after denial after denial, and everybody like, oh, just keep trying, don't give up. What the fuck you mean? I'm losing everything while you're telling me to keep trying and not keep getting a door slammed in my face. You know what I'm saying? I went from living in a 3-bedroom apartment to living in my car. I stayed in my car for, I say total, maybe 4 of those months, not straight. I mean, sometimes I would, you know, if I could afford it, I would get a hotel room, or I would run into people that would like let me stay with them for a couple nights, or I would stay like abandoned houses. If you be discreet about it, you know, you might stay there for like a week or something like that before anybody says something to you. But yeah.
Tracy ran through her savings, maxed out her credit cards, and then she got into a fist fight, which was a parole violation. That put her back in custody for 2 months.
This time when she got out, she went into a transitional house in San Francisco so she wouldn't have to deal with the crazy Bay Area rents yet.
Ooh, I feel her on that one.
Oh, man.
I mean, parole officers can't even live in San Francisco.
I know. I mean, honestly, I don't know how people getting out are supposed to live here.
And that makes getting a good paying job even more important. So Tracy got her resume on a job site ASAP. But when a shipping company asked to interview her, she was skeptical.
Look, I haven't replied to your request for an interview because I don't think you're going to hire me. Just straight up. I have this charge and they're a shipping company. So I didn't think, you know, that they would take me. I've been denied by other shipping companies. So when they hit me, I was like, oh, yeah, I ain't going to be able to interview with y'all. She was like, oh, just come in anyway. And I was like, look, lady, I really didn't want to interview with them, you know? I just didn't want to go through it again. And I ended up going on the interview. They ran a background check and fucking hired me anyway.
Yes, they hired her anyway. Some companies do actually recognize that people change. Things are finally looking up for Tracy.
And through all her job hunting, she never stopped writing.
That's right. She has since finished 2 novels. They're part of an urban fiction series about 2 sisters pulled into a life of crime.
What? Calm down, Lori said. Both she and Nina were staring at Kisses in shock. What? Tell us what the fuck happened. Just go, she insisted, looking at them eyes wide. Oh, shit, Lori said, spotting a man running out of the hotel, arms flailing, yelling obscenities.
She just sent off for her copyright, and she's even got artwork for the covers. All she needs now is a publisher.
Can't wait to read them.
The main thing that drove me to write a book was I wanted to leave something behind with my name on it. Like, I can't do the shit that I wanted to do when I was a kid, you know what I'm saying? No fucking way they're gonna let me be nobody's lawyer. So, but I had to find a new dream. I had to find something else that I wanted to do with my life.
My name is Travis Steels. I clean up the Tenderloin area, San Francisco, picking up trash. I went to prison in 1988, murdered someone April 28th, 1988. First degree murder. And I got out March 28th, 2019. My whole life, I robbed people. I sold drugs, I did everything against work. I didn't think I'd never get out of prison. And I told myself when I was in prison that if I ever get out of prison, I shovel shit if I have to. You know, I ain't gonna go back to doing crime. That's far gone. So if you got some shit you need me to clean up, call me. And I take the job.
Recently, I spent an afternoon on a job with Chavez Steels. He actually lives in the same transitional house as Tracy, in a Tenderloin. He's got a job cleaning up the neighborhood there.
The Tenderloin is probably one of the roughest neighborhoods in San Francisco because of the homelessness. I'm not from here, but this is where I'm from now. So till I leave, this is my home, the Tenderloin area. The way I do it, I do the long streets one day, from O'Farrell to Bush. Then the next day I do the cross streets from Van Ness to Leavenworth.
So square mileage, what is that, like a 1 square mile?
Yeah, 1 square mile. The grabbers is to pick up trash. The bags is to put the trash in.
I see you have like this little red box, so I assume that's for like
syringes.
Hypodermic, yeah.
Syringes. This box for syringes. Little tongs here is to grab the syringes. I have hand sanitizer. I have a straper to scrape gum and stuff off the ground when I see it. Pen.
So yeah.
Graffiti wipe. This is what I do. Homeless people, they kind of feel like this is their home, and I understand that. So they really don't want you getting close to it, thinking that, you know, you're going to take something from them. So when I see them kind of give me that look, I just back up. And even if it's trash in the area, I just go around and just keep going. If they give you that look, you know, you when you've been around a long time, you kind of know that look by being a criminal yourself and just being out here. You kind of know that look. He know what I'm talking about.
It's that look like this ain't trash. This is my property.
This is my property. Yeah. You know, like you go ask somebody for something and they sell, that look they give you like I ain't got it.
Keep it moving, Jack.
Yeah, keep it moving, you know.
Indeed. No, that's what's up, though. But yeah, they don't even trip that you out here, they live on the streets, and you just trying to make the streets look better while they live here.
No, half of them tell me thank you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, a lot of them say thank you, even the homeless people. You know, they might throw some trash down and tell you thank you, but that's okay. Yeah, that's why I got a job.
In hindsight, committing crime back in the day, I assume, I don't want to put words in your mouth, was a job for you.
That's what it was. Way of life. Didn't care who I hurt, as long as I had some in my pocket.
Yeah, I don't know where we get that mentality from, but I think everybody in every ghetto got that mentality growing up.
I know where mine come from. Seeing all the older guys running around the neighborhood with these pretty cars, pretty women, plenty of money in their pocket, and I knew what they was doing. So I picked up the same habits that they was doing. That's how I become that guy. But I took mine to another level. Half of them was just like maybe doing burglaries and stuff. I started robbing and doing other things. You know? I started adding as I went. This job is about $16 an hour. It's not the money though. It's being able to be out here and talking to people, seeing what they're up against. So I don't put myself in that same situation. It's still possible. If we don't get ourselves together when we do get out here, we can be that same guy, you know, living on that sidewalk. I don't have nothing. I'm just like them. Just a paycheck away from being homeless myself. I was given another chance at life, so this time I'm gonna take it and run with it.
Right.
I don't get no more chances. That was it.
So, you know, I understand that. You know, a lot of us have a lot of way more years behind us than we got ahead of us.
Right.
So we just got to live to the best of our ability no matter what.
Yeah. Going to prison, you're young, come out. I was 29 years old, I went to prison. I'm going to be 61 now, so that's the stretch we do.
Right.
We'll be back after the break.
I'm Shankar Vedantam, here to tell you about a great mystery. That mystery is you. As the host of a podcast called Hidden Brain, I explore big questions about what it means to be human. Questions like, where do our emotions come from? Why do so many of us feel overwhelmed by modern life? How can we better understand the people around us? Discover your hidden brain. Find us wherever you get your podcasts.
Support for Ear Hustle comes from Odoo. If you feel like you're wasting time and money with your current business software, or just want to know what you could be missing, then you need to join the millions of other users who switched to Odoo. Odoo is the affordable all-in-one management software with a library of fully integrated business applications that help you get more done in less time for a fraction of the price. To learn more, visit odoo.com/earhustle. That's odoo.com/earhustle. Odoo, modern management made simple.
What was your work history before you went inside of prison?
I didn't have no job. I hustled.
What was your hustle?
I sold dope.
What kind of dope?
Crack cocaine and marijuana.
Were you fluent on computers before you got locked up?
Nah, I didn't grow up in no household that had a computer.
So, you was selling dope, fool. You should have made money.
Man, there wasn't nobody thinking about no computer. We had pagers when I first started selling dope. That was our computer.
This is Jason Jones. Jason served a 13-and-a-half-year sentence, and about 5 years of those were at San Quentin. He's been out for just over a year now and has an awesome job. And Earlon, you wanted to find out how he got there.
I did, because I knew him in prison.
Mm-hmm.
And a few years ago, I would not have said that this guy is going to get it together. So what was your work history inside of prison?
My first job was in the kitchen at Corcoran State Prison. Then I worked in the knit mill, so he was making socks. I didn't like that either.
Jason left his jobs and was out of work. And you know what they say about idle hands. They'll get you in trouble. His rule violations had him on limited time out of his cell, no care packages, no programs, all from fucking up. But once his disciplines was done, another prisoner, a lifer, who looks out for younger guys, took him up under his wing.
I remember when he started coming down to the media lab. He got involved in that photography project I was doing, and he was great, smart, and always really fun to be around.
Yeah, he was a cool little dude. You know, he just needed a little direction.
Mm-hmm.
But he started taking this computer coding class run by this group called Last Mile.
Okay, it's worth mentioning that he didn't get into the class because of some driving ambition. He kind of got pushed into it.
Pumped up. When you went to the coding class originally, why did you want to go?
Just to play solitaire. I wanted to play solitaire for like 2 months and then quit. I didn't know what coding was. I only went out of respect for like the OGs. Like, I'm thinking, you even told me. I went around there. You was like, man, you stupid as hell if you don't go. Everybody was telling me, like, man, go, just go, just go. So I went. It wasn't because I thought I had a future in it.
The first day, they gave him a task.
Okay, so today, I want you to pair up with somebody, and by the end of the week, I want you to build a website. I was like, what the hell? Build a website? Early on, the first challenge was the racial barrier. Like, I paired up with this white, bald-headed dude that I thought was racist as hell. I was like, oh, they got me with this racist. Right? Dude ended up being my friend, ended up being hella cool. We still talk to this day. I learned a whole lot from him.
Turns out, Jason was kind of good with computers, so he stayed in the class.
He was so good at it that he and some of his other colleagues started doing projects for honest-to-God outside companies like Airbnb, which wasn't easy because in San Quentin, guys don't have access to the internet.
Incarcerated people in the state of California are not allowed to get online.
But, of course, for Jason and the other coders, there was a workaround.
They basically had to build an offline replica of Airbnb's website and then figure out how to fix it.
That is crazy. But that crazy workaround was just fine because people noticed the good work coming out of San Quentin.
And one day, not long before Jason was going to get out of prison, a recruiting guy from a tech company came in to visit the guys.
And he came, sit down in our dev shop, talked to us for about an hour, and then at the end of the hour, brings out the contract right there. I didn't even read it. I just signed it. He was like, you ain't going to read it? I'm like, nah, I'm going to have him sign it before you change your mind. Signed it, and it was the first time. It was like, cool, because before that, a lot of people showed interest. It was like, oh, man, get at me when you get out. Contact me. I got a job for you, this and that. But that don't mean nothing. You know, that don't mean nothing.
Nah, that's like
the same.
Business card.
Yeah. But that's like the same when somebody getting out, like, man, write me. I'm going to send you some money.
When he first got out, Jason worked as an engineer at a big entertainment tech company. But now he's working for the same program that taught him coding in San Quentin.
The Last Mile.
Yep. Basically, he's teaching the classes he used to take inside.
But he's not just teaching them inside San Quentin.
Mm-mm.
He's got classes inside of correctional facilities for youth and adults in 5 different states, as well as a class at a local high school in West Oakland.
And when he's talking to people inside who are scared about finding work when they get out, he tells them not to worry because they already know how to hustle.
You know, it's people in there that wash clothes and like cook all day to sell tacos on the tier in there for 75 cents for 3 soups, right? So if you can't take that hustle into something that you love doing, then you playing. You're playing.
What's the most surprising thing about your job, man?
The most surprising thing, how much people want me to change the way I dress. Yeah.
It's tech. Everybody do that shit in boxers and shit.
Here. I don't agree with the concept of code switching. Like, you got to fit into this culture. I believe in creating culture, and I believe in being who you are. tech has a real problem with thinking diversity only mean cosmetic diversity. And I don't think that's what diversity means. I believe diversity means you have to accept my background. You have to accept my religious beliefs. You have to accept my
weirdness.
Yeah, all my weirdness that come with me and everything else, right? Like, yeah, remember, I pulled over the Mohawk and I dyed it a little bit after that with a blonde Mohawk, right?
Right.
And I'm coming in with Jordans and everything else, chain, my grill in, everything, right? I'm the only one that look like that in there, right? That made a lot of people uncomfortable.
Yeah, I see you corrected that shit. You look normal now.
Well, actually, I cut my hair only because I want the dye it regular color, and I'm just too lazy to grow it back.
I'm with you, man, but I think you pulling my leg. I think you conformed, homie. I think you sold out. Did you sell out on
me? No, I didn't sell out.
All right.
I still become who I am, and I think there's a level of professionalism that needs to be respected, right? But when you start to use the word professionalism and the concept of professionalism to compromise my identity, then that's when I have a problem with it.
Jason may have cut his mohawk, but he still got style.
Mm-hmm.
When I talked to him, he was sporting a designer shirt with fancy rips across him, jeans, and Jordans. He looked good.
And it's great to know that he's doing so well.
Well, I mean, a lot of people that come to that conclusion in their life that they're tired of doing this shit end up doing well when they get out of prison.
All right, I think it's time we caught up with Shane to see how he's doing. He's the guy who worked at the San Quentin sewage facility. And E, you recently caught up with him.
Sure did.
Is that mittens?
What's up, big dog?
Is that mittens? What's up, dog?
How you been?
Oh, man, I'm chilling. How you been, man? You look like a hard-working man.
All right,
bro. Mittens?
That's his prison nickname. I asked him where it came from. Hey, well, why is it mittens, man? Tell us.
Because I came up to my buddy one day, and I said, like, hey, Hoss, man, like, wouldn't it be sick? Because I was always trying to come up with, like, nicknames, because, like, I met so many dudes in there with, like, cool nicknames. I was like, I kind of want, like, a cool nickname, but, like, none really ever fell into my lap. But when I saw Hoss on the yard, I was like, hey, Hoss, man, wouldn't it be sick if there was, like, a guy, and he was, like, hella good at fighting, and they would call him Mitts, but, you know, just to fuck around, they'd call him Mittens, and he'd say, so you want me to call you Mittens? I'm like, no, man. Like, I was, all right, Mittens.
Mittens it is, and mittens it shall be forever. For me, at least.
Okay, prison nicknames. I love how guys have so many different names. But since he's out, maybe we should just call him by his birth name.
Probably so. I met Shane Hampton, a.k.a. Mittens, down in Santa Cruz. We sat outside the transitional house where he's living now. He's been out about a year and a half.
I did put on my resume, though, that I was in the sewage treatment plant in San Quentin, though. So.
That sounds so...
It sounds so fancy,
so
huh?
It's a
glamorous lifestyle, right? Let you know your
very
only,
important.
Yeah, your only tools are, like, trash bags that always rip and a pitchfork, so...
Oh, Shane. He's not working in shit no more.
No, but his job is still kind of sewage adjacent. He started looking for this job when he was still on blackout.
A blackout is when someone first goes from prison to transitional housing and is not supposed to leave that facility. Shane was on blackout for 2 weeks.
I didn't want to get off blackout and have nothing to do. And I'd already watched, you know, Stranger Things and like all this stuff, you know, and I was like, I was kind of a week into it and I was ready to get cracked. So I emailed and I called a couple places.
And he got through to Jason, the owner of a local plumbing company.
I told Jason straight up, I was like, listen, man, like, I mean, I've been in prison for like a while. You know, he came down and talked to me and he's like, hey, man, like, I'm sympathetic to a guy in your position. We're going to give you a shot, you know? And he's like, how much do you think you're worth? And I'm like, I don't know, not much. So he's like, all right, we'll start you off at this. And then since then, I've got made like, I mean, I've gotten like a $4 raise, you know, over the course of the year.
He's now earning about $18 an hour.
Not bad.
Yeah, it's a long way from that 11 cents an hour back at his job shoveling shit in San Quentin.
And aside from his familiarity with wastewater, there's some other things he learned inside that he's found useful in his new job.
When I go to a job, like if I'm on new construction, I treat it like if I was going to like a yard. Kind of lay low for the first couple days, you know, just see who's who, do as you're told, follow the rules, maybe like even eat lunch by yourself. We know who the foreman is, right? But like, who's like a good guy to take advice from? Maybe who's just kind of like messing around, you know what I mean? And just skating by, you know, maybe some guy tells you like, oh man, you can take a 50-minute lunch, but you can't take a 50-minute, they could take a 50-minute lunch because for whatever reason, but like, you don't want to set yourself up to get in trouble.
So far, so good. Shane hasn't gotten himself in trouble, but he still has his worries.
You know, you don't want to make leaks. You don't want to flood someone's house or like a four-story like or multi-unit apartment building. So that's why I tighten things so tight. It's because I really want to make sure it doesn't leak. But then when you tighten things too tight, you could also break them. And I'm lucky enough where my dad, he's a plumber in the union in San Francisco. So I could call him and be like, I don't know what I'm doing. Help me. And like, I'll put him on like, you know, video. And I'm like, look at this. Why is it doing this? So, and they'll like walk me through it and stuff because he's been doing it for 35 years. We talk almost every day now. It's always about work, but it's still, you know, you're still talking to your dad.
Right. That's good, yeah, man.
It's a cool thing, man. I talked to him before you guys came over here and told him how I split that fitting. Now we're going to have to cut the wall open and ask him if I'm going to lose my job over it. Because I have a lot of like unrealistic like fears, you know, from like my past employment history. But what I got to remember is like I'm not using anymore. And that was 99% of the reason why I ever got fired from any job. I mean, I showed up late because I was getting loaded or like whatever, you know? And so now that I don't do those things, it's still like in the back of my head, like on Mondays, like I'm usually freaking out that I'm going to lose my job because like I over tightened something. But like, that's probably not really realistic.
What does it feel like to have a job, man?
I feel, you know, useful. I feel like, you know, like I got something to offer. You know, I mean, I'm able to pay my car insurance, you know, pay my cell phone bill. I don't have to like ask dad for help. And like my fiance, she's a business owner, but she's a new business owner. And when taxes came around, they were like a little overwhelming when you were a small business owner. You know, she's like, what the fuck?
You got to pay that shit quarterly.
Way more than I expected, right? So, and I was in a position where I was like, cool, here.
Is it safe to say that this is the longest job you've had?
Fuck yeah, it is. It's crazy. I've never had a job this long before. It's amazing. It really is.
So, Earlonne, we've been talking with a lot of formerly incarcerated men and women about their struggles and successes in the job market.
Right.
And we know it's hard finding a job. It's even hard for people who haven't done time. But what do you think are the most difficult challenges?
Well, the first difficult challenges is those background checks.
Mm-hmm.
You may be able to get in the door without telling your employer about your incarceration.
Right.
But how do you convince them that you're not the person you were 5, 10, 15 years ago?
I know, that's a hard one because some people actually don't want to believe in that change.
Another big challenge is confidence in yourself. You need to feel like you can compete out here. If you've been out of the workforce for decades or never even been employed, you might not feel so good about your prospects.
Mm-hmm.
You might feel that everyone else has experience that you've been denied.
Yeah, so how does someone deal with that?
Well, for people that's in prison, you can start by taking advantage of whatever program and education you can get on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And for those that's now out, first work your parole officers to see what resources you can get a hold of. Tap in with your networks. And also, remember what Jason Jones said. That same hard work that got you through your prison term is going to serve you well out here on the streets.
Big thanks to Mittens, a.k.a. Shane Hampton.
And Jason Jones, Chavis Stills, and Tracy Hardway for sharing their job experiences with us.
This episode was almost entirely recorded on the outside, but we'll be back next week with our inside host, Rahsaan New York Thomas. Our other inside producers include me, Nigel Poor, Pat Masidi Miller, and John Yaya Johnson.
Our outside producers are me, Earlonne Woods, and Bruce Wallace. This episode was scored with music by Antoine Williams, David Jassy, and Rashid Zinneman. Aaron Wade is our digital producer, Curtis Fox is our senior producer, and Julie Shapiro is our executive producer for Radiotopia.
We want to thank Warden Ron Davis, and as you know, every episode has to be approved by this guy here.
Voice message received at 6:42 p.m. today.
It's Lieutenant Sam Brownman from the Public Information Officer at San Quentin State Prison. And for the first time, I'm actually going to give an approval outside of San Quentin. I'm actually several thousand miles away in Kansas City, Missouri, en route to the East Coast, delivering my daughter to what they call the real HU. For those of you who know what that is, I'm sure you know. But again, this is Lieutenant Sam Robinson outside of San Quentin, but still the public information officer at San Quentin State Prison, and I do approve this episode.
Next time on Ear Hustle, we're doing our Catch a Kite episode. That's where we answer listeners' questions.
And my question is whether it's hard to sleep in prison with the noise or the temperature, and whether you all take naps during the day.
This podcast was made possible with support from the Chan Zuckerberg Initiative, working to redesign the justice system by building power and opportunity for communities impacted by incarceration.
Check out our website, earhustlesq.com, where you can sign up for our newsletter, see pictures of people in our stories, and it's also a place to buy Ear Hustle sticker packs, mugs, and t-shirts. So check it out. And also, please follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at earhustlesq.
Ear Hustle is a proud member of Radiotopia from PRX, a collection of the best podcasts around. Hear more at radiotopia.fm. I'm Earlonne Woods.
And I'm Nigel Poor.
Thanks for listening.
Remember, some guy tried to convince me to do this little hustle, right? You know, you're going to go to prison and start following the rules. I'm like, yeah, motherfucker. That's exactly when I'm going to start following the rules. I'm not trying to go to jail in prison. You must be crazy.
Psst, it's Earlonne.
And Nigel.
Here again, reminding you to donate to our spring fundraiser today so we can keep bringing you more Ear Hustle.
Everyone who donates will be invited to our virtual party on June 13th. If you've never been, it's a fun time where we talk about the season and answer some of your questions live. Uncensored, live.
And I will be on a hologram so y'all can see me.
3DE.
On Zoom. Every donation, any amount, will help us reach our goal. So please go to earhustlesq.com to learn more and please contribute.
Thank you.
If you can find it in your heart, in your pocket, in your wallet, in the couch.
Radiotopia.